Okay, this is Richie's last morning with us over Hanukkah. Here's an email. Well, my kids went around planning to get on me. I'm in my grandkids. Daf Lamed. Omar lehem hamimune. They've now reached Lishkata Gazit, and it's time now for the pious, for the main avodot in the morning. Bovei fisu, come now to do the pious, and this pious is going to define mi yishchot, mi yizrok, which is the lashon and yoma. Here we have the who will be hashofet, who will be hazoreg. Mi medashen mizbeach hapnimi, mi medashen et hamnora, mi ma'ala evarim lekevesh. And the people that would now, even though, by the way, Shechita was kosher bizarre, obviously, it's not really an avodah. Nonetheless, they had to do a pious, which is interesting. It means that there was competition, even on non-avodot. And the reason is because the Tamid was very chaviv. After all, it started off the whole day's avodah. The Torah talks about it at such a length, specifically. And therefore, there was competition for the actual Shechita, even though the main avodah was the Zerika. But they did a pious for Shechita as well. No, Zar.
It's kosher bizarre.
It's kosher bizarre.
But how could a Zar get into
there? Why not? So I'm itself in the Mizbeach. There's no Zar is allowed in.
Yeah.
Mi bedashen Mizbeach ha'pnimi. And we saw before that we have, besides the Dishun Mizbeach ha'chitzon, there was also a Dishun Mizbeach ha'pnimi, which paralleled the Dishun Mizbeach ha'chitzon, as we'll see, even the way that they did it. Mimidashenet HaMenorah, and at the Dishun HaMenorah, there's a very interesting chiddush from the Brisker Rav, which he uses to answer a number of very difficult steerers in the Halacha and the Rambam, is that there's two dinim about Hatavat HaNerot on the Menorah. There's a separate Halacha of Hatava, which means preparing, and according to the Rambam, and lighting the Neros of the Menorah. But there's a separate mitzvah of dishun, which is the removal of the ash that was there only after it's been completely burned. And he uses this as a way of explaining why we find a difference between caring for a ner that went out and to doing the actual dishun of nerot that had finished all of their burning. We'll see some of this later. But in any event, the use of the lashon of your midashen is consistent with that Brisker Rav's pshat, because otherwise we call it hatava. Mi ma'ala evarim lakevesh, and who brings up the evarim of the tamid after it has been, remember this is a korban ola, so all of it is going up on the mizbeach, but the korban ola, remember, the skin is, it's skin first, and then it is also minuta, it's cut up into its particular parts, and these parts were first brought up from the kevesh. Then we interrupted to other avodas, as we'll see. And then we had Kohanim taking them up from the Kevesh on to the menorah directly. And it was split between quite a number of Kohanim. And it was split in this fashion. Harosh v'haregel shel yamin. The right foot, which is the rear. Regel is called, in the Hebrew we distinguish between yad v'regel and a behemah as well. So a regal means what we would say in English is the rear leg,
hind leg.
This is like on the, and I think there are still people who say it, but they used to call the axle a front axle, no matter what. It was a rear front axle. Right. Remember. Front axle,
Achori.
Back axle, kid me.
Front back axle,
okay. So here the regel, though, makes sense. So the regel would be the hind leg, but the right one, together with the rosh. The left was brought separately, as we'll see. And that was brought with one person. Shtei hayadayim was another person. Ha'oketz v'aregel shel shmol. Now the oketz area, together with the left leg, was brought by another person. Ha'chazeh v'hagira was brought by another person. Shtei atfanot hakrovayim, which included it, which was in a container that included all of the intestines, stomachs, and so on and so forth. Hasolet was another person. And that was, of course, for the mincha that would be brought after the Evarim. A chavitim, that would be someone who was bringing now the chavite kohen gadol for him. The yayin for the nesach. Hafisu, they went ahead and they did that pious. Zachar, misha zachar, well, whoever was zocher, from him we counted towards his right. The next 12 kohanim, besides him, would be the 13 people who were zocher to the above various avodot. Omar lahem, tzu'u or u im higiyaz van ashrita. Then the memuna would say, go out and see. They would go up to a tall place to make absolutely certain this was a nohuk, yom yom, to be certain that they wouldn't be shochet belaila, which would pass on the shkita. So they had a watchman, who was the ro'eh, haro'eh omer barkai, that the light now has spread. Matya ben...
They did this every morning? Not just Yom Kippur?
It's a machlokes. The Yerushalmi Matya ben Shmuel, who says, Yir p'nei kol ha-mizrach ha-tshu b'chabron is only on Yom Kippurim. And that was in order to be... What he said was, some say that he was chaylek, and some say he was actually the ro'eh. And as the ro'eh, he would say that it's light all the way to Hebron. Otherwise, we learned that his shita is, the question was asked, that you're p'nei kol ha-mizrach? The person would first say p'nei kol ha-mizrach, and he was asked, atcha b'chebron, and he would say, hey, and this is another shita, not that he just did it that way. And again, as they say, some learn that this is dafka on Yom Kippurim, the mentioning of Hebron, as the Gemara says, is lahaskir, the schut of Yeshenei Hebron. So there's bechalal, the relationship between Yerushalayim, the Beit HaMikdash, and Hebron, the first Malchus of David. We start in Hebron, and then we move on to Yerushalayim. The whole story of the rebellion and so on. And very kosher, the two places. V'uomer hein. Amar lehem tzu'u v'haviu tzleh milishkat ha-tla'im. Go out then and bring a tzleh from the lishkat ha-tla'im, which they used to keep, tzla'im that had been mevukarim, that had been checked over before, so that there were always sufficient number of tzla'im ready to be used for the Korban Tamid and the Musaf when necessary. And these were this, well, we learned out from the Korban Pesach, which there we had 4 days of Bikur, but it's that doesn't literally mean in fact that 4 days of Bikur. And the Lishkat HaTla'im was Netuna b'miktzoa tzfonit ma'aravit. It was a Lishka that was on the northwest side of the Azara. Now again, I remember looking at it from the Tzad of the Kotel Maravi, so you would be looking, if you were inside the wall, on the other side of the wall, you would be looking at dirt. I'm talking about the top of the wall. if you're up on top, on the other side of the Kotel, so on your left would be the Tzad Tzafon, correct? Because you're standing in the back of everything. And you would be looking at the Beit HaMoked. The Beit HaMoked was all the way in that corner, on the west corner, closest to you, all the way to the north. So it would be on your left. One of the four lishakot in the Beit HaMoked, remember the Beit HaMoked was this large inner room, and then it was surrounded by lishakot. One of the lishakot in the Beit HaMoked was the lishkat ha-tla'im. And one of them was the lishkat ha-chotamot. The Lishkat HaChotamot was where you would pay your money for Nisachim, and you were given a ticket. You would then present the ticket in order to have the Nisachim brought for you.
Everybody came in and out of the Beit HaMoked?
No, you would office. Only go there to that office, but that office faced the outside, as we see when we get to Midos. Remember, the four, two were inner and two were outer. So basically what we have over here really is an X shape. You go from the lower hand of the X facing you, the southern west, to the northeast for the Lishkat HaChotamot. And then we go back around the X and the continuation in Midos. One of them was called Lishkat Beit HaMoked. The Lishkat Beit HaMoked was in the Beit HaMoked itself, but that was the place where they had the sauna going. The other was the lishka where the lechem haponim was made, and that would be the top of the X, all the way at the corner, at the edge of the wall. Nichnasu leLishkat HaKelim, and from there they went to the Lishkat HaKelim, and Vehotziu Misham Tishim Ushlosha Klei Kesef Uklei Zahav. And they took out the 93 different kelim that were used in the course of the Avodah of the morning. The Yerushalmi says that this 93 is fascinating. Is connected the number of times that the Shem Hashem was used in Haggai and Malachi, which is fascinating. In other words, there's some. We know that Haggai is a Chag. Actually, in the Yerushalmi, the Lashon is Haggai is a Chag Yom Malachi. But it doesn't add up. It adds up only Chagai and Malachi. There's a Gersa change in which Zachari isn't mentioned. But we know that the closing, the last Nevi'im, Chagai, Zachari, and Malachi, were the ones who came up in order to be made on the Mokom HaMizbeach. So they were fundamentally related to the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. And apparently in the Sod level of their Nevi'ut, there are elements that relate directly to different aspects in the binyan, and so the Yerushalmi points out that it's not coincidental that the number of kelim that are used, each one of them is keneged a mention of the Shem Hashem in those neviut. So that they brought out, these were including both klei kesef and klei zahav. And here is the famous issue that we talked about yesterday, hishku et tamid bekosh shel zahav. We saw that there was a machlokas yesterday as to whether that's to be taken literally or whether it's a guzma. Because Rava says, why should we take it literally? I mean, why would we want to use Zahav? Whereas we saw on the contrary, maybe because of Einaniyut, B'makom HaShirut, and Badavka to make an impression that we use Zahav even for such a simple thing as giving a drink to the animal before Shechita. The reason they would do that is because in that last drink, So you rehydrate the animal in such a way it becomes easier to skin after Shechita. So there's more water than between the skin and its connective tissue. Now this is true that we went to the Lishkat HaTlaim. The reason we went to the Lishkat HaTlaim was because the animals there have all been carefully checked for Mumin, very much in the light here. I mean, it's still pretty dark. Nonetheless, Mivakrimoto, we do another bikur at the last minute. Li'or avukot, of course, we have to use torchlight because it's still pretty dark. And just in case, something may have happened. Maybe it fell or it was hit by another animal in the course of the night. So just to make absolutely certain there's no change. Again, these are all inyanim that we do for bikur. Say we were bolish, the azorot, that we have real chashashot. But this is done as part of the hachana. And so they do it last minute. B'dika, and Misha Zacha, B'dishun Mizbeach HaPnimi, and B'dishun HaMenorah. Now, meanwhile, the ones that were given the job of the Dishun Mizbeach HaPnimi and the Dishun HaMenorah have to prepare themselves. It's a big, big machlokas, as you know, about the Seder HaAvodahs. Who exactly came first? What was be? There's a lot of different shitas in the Gemara and in the Rishonim as well about understanding the Gemara. The question of what Magdimim means, whether Magdimim means that this was done before the actual Zrik of the Dam HaTamid, or Magdimim means only to prepare themselves to have the Kalim that they needed to work with in their hands when it came time to do it, so that in any event they would go ahead because they needed to carry four Kalim, and that was the Tani, the Kuz, and the Shtei Maftechot. Now the Teni, when we call it Teni, is actually a Tanakh Lashon, HaTena Miyadecha, V'lakach HaKohen HaTena Miyadecha. So it was a basket, and it was Domela Tarkav. It was about the way a Tarkav, actually means Trei V'Kav, which would be three Kavim. And it was a standard size basket, container, for volume. However, this was not a true Tarkav. First of all, it was made out of gold, which is not standard for Tarkav. It was made out of gold, but it was machzik kabayim v'chetzi. It actually only held about 2.5 kav instead of a full 3 kav Tarkav, because it's trei v'kav, 2 plus a kav. And hakuz is domel kiton gadol, is like a large jar, shel zahav. And the shtei maftechot, the two maftechot that we're talking about, was Echad Shu Yored Ba'amat HaShechi. One of them was the one, now there's two ways of learning this, Amata Shechi, learn, the simple meaning is your arm, which is the Amma, and your Shechi is your underarm. And Amata Shechi would then mean, and this is the way most learn, that Amata Shechi, certainly in the Bavli, Amata Shechi means that the one of the locks for the Pishpish was on the inside. And this is to avoid rapid entry. In other words, somebody who's going to be opening this door is going to be taking his time opening it while the alarm is ringing. So in other words, you have to stick your hand through a hole, which is only large enough for your hand, all the way to your armpit, turn your arm around, insert the key in the back of the door, turn it, and only then can you use the key in the front of the door, which allows you to open the door. The Yerushalmi, the Mashmot, is Amat HaShechi is from the Lashon of Shochet, which is to bend. So Amat HaShechi would mean that you would have to bend all the way down to an Amma on the ground. That was its inconvenience. It was a lock on the ground, and there was another lock that was higher.
Same idea, just a different way of achieving it.
Well, no, over there was just that it was locked on top and bottom. It wasn't so much as a, you know, delaying tactic. If you lock the key, drop the key, you know, you always knew you had the guy with the torches behind you, and you watched your rear. Let me tell you, when they talk about watching your rear, that was because it started in a Beit HaMikdash with the guy who was carrying the torch.
You put your hand in, what, you fall down, how do you get it off the ground?
Bad news, they better have had it double somewhere.
It was a string on it, it was attached also.
You get fired.
That's where it comes from.
Are we going to, what was the basket used for?
Yeah, we're going to get there, sure.
What was the other opinion?
I said. One was Beit HaShechi and one was Shochet. Dushama's Lush is Shochet. You would bend down until an arm on the ground to get the lock on the bottom. And that, there's many doors in you know, the storefront doors where they have a lock down at the bottom and a lock on the top. Of course, that's what the plugbelet actually achieves, is that you use the lock in the middle, but it has arms that extend up and down, so it's locked for the four sides.
And right and left.
And right and left. Okay, so these were the two maftechot. So one was the Amat HaShechi, and one was Echad Shu Poter Kivan. One was that you can open directly, which most learn is in the front door. There are some who learn the Amat HaShechi opened up the front of the Pishpish. Poteach Kivan is the pshat that there was another key necessary for the door that would be between the Ta and the inside of the Heichal. Remember that the wall of the Heichal was extremely thick and contained chambers within it. Each one of those chambers is called a Ta, which in modern Hebrew has come to mean a cell in the same sense that the it's used in English, a cell as in a biological cell, as in a communist cell, and so on. That was the word cubicle. Originally, it was a cell. And we use now the expanded meaning of ta, based on this is where it occurs. The ta'im occur in reference to the Beit HaMikdash specifically, as opposed to the lishakot, which are actual rooms. These ta'im, they might be used in the same way a lishaka was used, although rarely, we'll see. And actually, there were the spaces between the outside wall and the inside wall. Over here, the pishpish would lead you into the ta that was next to the doorway, the main doorway of the Heichal. And then you would still need another key to get through the next door on the other side of the ta, or to your left, in order to be able to get closer to the gate, to get into the area where you could use your main key, as we'll see, to open up the... your handle to open up the main gate.
Each one of these, this was locked. This.
No, there was only one in which we allowed entry, as we'll see. And we're going to talk about that. Now, this was the Shnei Pishpishim. What happened over here is the man would come who had this Vaftechot. Balo lefishpesh hatzvoni. Again, remember, you entered now. We're no longer on the west side, on the other side of the Kotel HaMaravi. We entered into the Azara from the other side, the Arazesim side. We're coming from the east. We're now standing in front of the Heichal. And we have one gate to our right. And what direction is that?
North.
North. Correct. Because we're facing west, right? Okay. So we have one gate to our north, one pishpesh, that is to say, one of these little doorways that allows us to be mefresh fish, to feel our way through. And to the right, and one, well, to either side of the main gate. The Shar HaGadol. The Shar HaGadol is called the Shar HaGadol probably because it's the great gate, and it's the main entrance where most learn. Some learn it's Gadol in terms of Pishpashim, which I find very difficult to believe in. We'll call it the Shar because it's the main gate, and the Pishpashim are small doors.
The Shar of the Heichal?
The Shar of the Heichal. You're now facing the Shar of the Heichal. Now, you go into the one on the north, and there were actually Shnei Pishpashim Ayu La Shar HaGadol, Achat B'Tzafon V'Achat B'Darom. However, the one on the left side as you're facing the door, which is to your south, no one ever used. Lo Nichnas Bo Adam Mi'Olam. V'Alav U'Mufurash Ayedei Yecheskel. And Yecheskel makes reference to that. Now remember that the second Beit HaMikdash was a compromise between, because, as the Rambam puts it, the plans in Yecheskel were undecipherable. There was really no way to directly apply the plans of the third, the final Beit HaMikdash. It wasn't given over by Yecheskel the way Shmuel and David had given over the plans to Shlomo of the first Beit HaMikdash, because basically the second Beit HaMikdash was recognizably a compromise all along. And that's the Ad Yavor Amcha Hashem Ad Yavor Am Zukanit. That was supposed to be a second Bia. The second Bia really never took place. The whole thing was done in a compromised fashion. And the second Beit HaMikdash was partially Galut. Galut. It was a partial Galut and a partial Bayit. And that's why there was the whole question, shall we continue keeping Tisha B'Av during this period and so on, which is recorded in the Ketuvim. So some of it, as the Rambam says, some of it was made clear by Yecheskel, and those things were incorporated into the Bayit HaSheni as a stepping stone to the Bayit HaShlishi. One of the things that was made clear was the fact that there were two Pishpashim in the Shar HaGadol. And it says clearly in Yecheskel, Shenemar Bayomer Eli, over there we have the Malach that's taking Yecheskel around. And so he is told by Hashem that Ashar Hazeh Saburi Yiyeh, Lo Yifatach. This gateway shall remain closed and never opened. V'ish lo yavobo, ki Hashem Elokei Yisrael babo, v'hayeh sagur. So this is the Mokum where the Shekhinah enters, so to speak, and therefore it's kept closed, because Shekhinah does not need a door to be opened. Whatever it means, this is what it says. Natalat ha-mafteach upatachat ha-pishpesh. So now he's on the right hand side. Now he takes his key, opens up the pishpesh, and finds himself in the ta. And he has to go from the ta into the heichal, umi'atah le-heichal, and then he has to come up now to the back of the Shar HaGadol.
He's going to open it from the inside.
He's going to open it from the inside, exactly. You cannot open the Shar HaGadol from the outside, because it was closed with bariach. How do you say bariach in English?
A bolt.
Thank you.
A breach.
Like when you barricade that thing across the door, right?
No, but the whole thing is called a breach, where you put something in front of the door. But if you have a bolt, and it closes the door. A neger in Hebrew is a bolt. Correct. Okay, so hevirat ha-neger, he now moved the bolt out of the way to allow the door to open. Ve'et ha-potachot, and opened up the locks. U'patcho, and then he would swing the door open. Lo'haya shochet ha-shochet, ad sh'shomei ha-shar ha-gadol sh'niftach. Now the door, when it opened, was very audible. And that was audible, and that was done on purpose. You could hear it from far away, because you needed to know that the gates of the Beit HaMikdash were open, because it always says petach ol moed. Gemara dash bizmanchu patuach velo bizmanchu na'ul. And therefore, in order for the korban tamid to be kosher, you had to have the shkita b'sha'ar sha'delet p'tucha. And so he would hear it when he heard it, lo haya shochet, until he heard it. And somewhere that this was a miraculous relationship between Yericho and Yerushalayim, particularly, and did not extend in a circle around Yerushalayim for the 25 kilometers of the distance of Yericho. And this is because Yericho, those who learn this way say that Yericho was the Tchilat Kibush Haaretz, and therefore it's Mechubar to Yerushalayim, is the closing of the Kibush. And so, Bedaf, can you recall this? No, let's just say that, you know, this is saying that the city where it was noticeable was Yericho. The truth is that there's clearly a relationship between the concept of Yericho as a name and the Ktoret, which was smelled in the city of smell, which is Yericho.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only its relationship to the moon, which is also Nogea, really, the sun-moon orientation of the Beit HaMikdash, is something which we'll discuss. But you could hear in Yericho when the Shar HaGadol was open.
You know, you can see when you're at Yericho.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
You can look right up. There must be a wadi and something
mm-hmm.
comes straight down because you can see the star. You can see which
you can actually see where the Beit HaMikdash would be.
Har HaZeitim.
But in other words, if the Heichal was built, it would might extend even over above Har HaZeitim enough that you could see it.
And the sound that
drops. For that's why the sun wasn't the art source, but it's the natural valley it would go.
Mm-hmm.
It's miraculous that it reached so far.
Uh-huh.
But it is a natural
valley. It is a natural valley.
And the other thing, maybe, is that the Mishmaros would split and part would be doing the logistics in Yericho for the
Beis HaMikdash. Correct.
As I said,
we'll see a lot of fascinating connections about Yericho to Yerushalayim. But let us continue here. One of the other things that once we're on the topic already, by the way, not only did they hear the Kol Shara Galosh and Iftach, but Miricho Yushomim Kol HaMagrefa. You remember that wonderful, or I shall call it the marvelous Magrefa from our Gemara and Erechim that discussed the Magrefa, which was in the Beit HaMikdash, that could generate 1,000 different tones.
Mm-hmm.
And some learn it actually means a shovel. In other words, the shovel on the Mizbeach was a musical instrument.
Mm-hmm.
So that the entire element of the Avoda was wrapped in music. Obviously, we know that from the Leviim and Shira, but Ad Kedei Kach, that the all of the Kalim had some connection to music. Others learn that we just call it a Magrefa. We wouldn't really use a musical instrument on the Mizbeach, but in any event, it was called the Magrefa, and they could hear the Magrefa playing in Yericho.
The old mosaics, right? You see,
it's true.
Two things. There's always a menorah, and a lulav, and an esrog, and this square with a little handle.
We call it an incense shovel.
Right, so I think Rabbi Yeshua Brand, his name was a Talmud Chacham and was into archaeology, suggests why pick that? Because
mm-hmm.
the Magrefa. The Magrefa is so hushed.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, why would it be so outstanding?
Wow, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Was that in Sephora? I don't remember that.
Yes.
There is one in
Sephora? Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what about it. Very all of them.
Yeah,
Sephora
is
the one I've
yes, I don't remember a mosaic with this thing.
I'm joking,
Marne,
I'm joking.
You're saying he doesn't remember that doesn't have it. That doesn't have it.
Yeah.
Offhand.
Miriecho hayushamim kol ben arza makish betzilzal. They also would hear the sound of ben arza playing his tzilzal in English as well.
Simple.
Yeah. And the Yericho hayushamim kol achalil, also on days of Halal, like today. No, not really, probably. Because it's only Bishah when you're greeting Halal at the time of Hakrova. So, but then they would hear the Kol HaKhalil. That's the Yud Beis Yamim HaKhalil Makel Ifnei HaMizbeach. Miyericho HaYoshomim Kol Gvini Cruz. This Gvini was quite a character. By the way, the names of the characters became permanently associated with their jobs. So there were some very strange characters that had, powerful things that they would do. And Gvini had an incredible voice, which could be heard from Yericho. And he was the one, of course, who went around waking everybody up. He was the crier. And he would say, Shtayuf, Shtayuf, Lavet, But sometimes it wasn't in Yiddish. I don't know how they could say that.
That's what
it's clear it must have been in Yiddish. Yericho HaYoshomim Kol HaEitz Sha'asa Ben Kati Muchani L'Kiyor. Also, they would hear the sound of the Muchani, which we spoke about before, which was the way that the Echav HaKohanim identified the fact that it was time to go now, that he was going to go and do his job on the Mizbeach Petrumas Hadesha. Miricho HaYoshomim Kol HaShir, they could also hear the music in the Beit HaMikdash. Miricho HaYoshomim Kol HaShofar, there was Katz every day. There were Tkiyos HaShofar on the Beit HaMikdash, it's the Mishnah goes through in Sukkah. V'yesh omrim af kolosho kohen gadol b'sha'a shehu maskir et Hashem b'yom ha'kippurim. Others say that you could even hear the kohen gadol saying b'shem Hashem on Yom Kippur. Some learn that this means you could hear the outcry of the Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto from the entire Tzibur in Yericho. Yericho ayu merichin reyach pitom haktoret. They also used to be able to smell the smell of the ktoret in Yericho. Omer Reb Elazar ben Degloy, izim ayu la'aba ba'arei hamichvar, which is much further than Yericho, and the other side of the Yarden, according to most. They would sneeze all the time from the smell of the ktoret. Mishas achabetamid. Now, getting back now to the seder of the avoda, the one who was zochen atamid moshcho would take it and bring it to the Beit Hamidbachai. Now, the Beit Hamidbachai was not really a bayit; it was an area that was dedicated to shechita in the Beit Hamikdash. And Misha Zachu Be'evarim, all the Kohanim that were supposed to be bringing up the Evarim to the Kevesh, they would go with him to the Beit HaMitbachayim. And where was this Beit HaMitbachayim? Beit HaMitbachayim ayon the Tzvonosho Mizbeach. Remember that the Shvita of Kodesh HaKodashim was kosher only on the northern side of the Azora. And so this area, which was used for Shvita, was to the north, and it was to the north of the end of the Mizbeach. There were eight low holders, which were amudim, which were used for support of metal pieces upon which you could hang the animal. Rivaim shel erez al gabeim. You had now blocks of erez that were implanted in them to be able to insert in there. Ankalaot shel barzel hayukvuim behem. And you had inside of these eight amudim, you had various sized hooks of metal.
Where was the erez wood?
On top of the amud,
like
to allow...
Or
no, it was just a block. It was a block that in which you could insert and pull out, without damaging the oven, you could insert these various kudas, because you would use different ones, depending on where you were. And you had shlosha sdarim b'kol achad v'achad. There were three sdarim of hooks. Now, there's some machlok as to why three. Some learn three sdarim in order you shouldn't have to take out hooks, put in new hooks, depending on the size of the animal. So there were three heights permanently there. So depending if you were bringing a shor or an aisle or a keves, you would want it on a different level because it was supported by a shulchan that was underneath so that it wasn't just hanging there. And others learn that it means on the three sides, but not towards the west, which was facing the Heichal. And this would be to allow the Kohen to stand, so you could have three people working around each one of these amudim. In other words, somebody could be standing on the east side, somebody could be standing on the north, somebody could be standing on the south. You don't want somebody standing on the west, because then he would put his back to the Heichal, so we didn't put a hook on that edge. So that would be the three Siddurim, two completely different approaches.
This is post-Chechting.
Yeah, we'll see that we had, yes, we have, for the Shechita we had a different thing.
According to the second one, it's one for each Mishmar, or no?
No. No. One, depending on where you're standing. No, not for each one. Why would you get three? Why do you get three for three Mishmar?
Right, so there's 24.
No, there's 24 everything.
Okay. But it's a bonus, it's one for each shaman.
Yeah, no, it's Amish, everything is 24, but it doesn't mean for practical reasons necessarily. I mean, remember that the concept, and I said that the concept, Avoda is called Shemush, and the concept of Shemush is the Shemesh. And we have the same idea of splitting a day into 24 hours for no particular reason all across the human species. I mean, so it's directly relates to this whole idea of what Tashmish means for Avoda.
Are you implying that all across the world, 24 is the set number that the day has been broken up to?
Yeah, if they have it broken up.
Rabbeinu Bachya by the Choshen, he mentions this connection of 24 hours to the 12.
There's literally dozens. I mean, as I've always said, that's the reason why you have 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie. Isn't that a dainty dish to set before a king? Right? And that's the number of ofos tamayim, is 4 and 20 blackbirds. It's nogea dafka, the kohanim, as I pointed out. The kohanim are birds. Now that's why they have the tziporin, which is used for malik. It's an art. Anyway. It is on Daf Chaf Dalet, yes. It was another connection. Shevitz in Nechun, remember we pointed that out. On Daf Chaf Dalet, you have all of the dinim of the Chachamim. And anyway, these would be Tola then mafshitin al shulchanot shel shayish shebein ha'amudim. Most learned that these shulchanot shel shayish are not the shulchanot that we're going to discuss in Midot, but there was a separate area of the shulchanot for washing out the kravayim. That's not what we're referring to over here. We're talking about cool shayish, so that it would actually keep the meat cool. And they would use this for hefshet of the or. Misha zachah b'dishun mizbeach ha'pnimi. Now, meanwhile, the one who was going to take care of the dishun ha'mizbeach of the k'toret, he would be nichnas. Notalat ateni v'nichol lefanav. He would put it, set it down. V'yachofen v'noten letocho. He would then collect the ash in his two hands and pull it together and put it down on into the teni that he had put on the ground. Of course, there was going to be a certain amount of ash that was left, because you can't gather it up in your hand, and that last little bit, the achrona, kibed et ashar letocho, he would then sweep it off into it, because he couldn't gather it in his hands, so he would sweep it off. V'inicho, he would leave it there, and there are some utaina that the leaving it there is keneged the dishon mizbeach ha'chitzon, which was an Indian bedavka to leave and not to take it out. Actually, there's another shita that learns ayachofein v'noten letocho doesn't mean noten letocho into the tenet. It means ayachofein v'noten letocho of the mizbeach. That just like you did a magrefa, you used the magrefa on the mizbeach, a pizza, to make a tapuach, you made a mini tapuach on the mizbeach haktoret so that it would be done in the same way. Then b'achrona, after you had the tapuach, then b'achrona you would go and you would sweep it up, which is similar to the trumat hadesha. Okay, that was the dishon mizbeach ha'pnimi.
It was like a decoration.
Well, it's more than a decoration. Oh, the tapuach. Yeah, it's more like a decoration.
Has the sun risen yet?
That depends on how you learn this whole thing of what Heir Pnei Kol HaMizrach means and so on. There's a lot of discussion. No, because for Pashas it's still between Amud HaShachar and Alos HaShachar and Netzach Hama. But it's just later. Yeah, as I mentioned, the Rambam sheet about this earlier, we were talking about the Dishon, about the... but we'll see more of it when we get to it. Okay, Nichnas V'not Alas HaTeni, Nichlefanav, we're sorry. And now the next going is Mishnah Zocha B'Dishon HaMenorah Nichnas. Now this, I think, Mishnah is probably one of the most confusing Mishnayos in terms of number of different shitas anywhere in Shas. Then that's because there are so many machlokas. And first of all, you have to start with the machlokas in the Gemara. How was the menorah set up? Was the menorah set up north south? Was the menorah set up east west? If the menorah was set up east west, and as I said, this is machlokas in the Gemara. The menorah is set up east-west, and that means that you hit, as you're coming in on the eastern side and going towards the west, you hit the easternmost Neirot. If the menorah is north-south, then you're facing the menorah as a whole, and then the question becomes, so which is the Ner HaMa'aravi? Because it's the Lifnei Hashem, we darshan, there's got to be one Ner that's Lifnei Hashem. What is the Ner that's Lifnei Hashem? They're all Lifnei Hashem. And here we have all types of different shitas, both within the Gemara, the opening shitas, which is that the Ner Ma'aravi, surprisingly, not bad. That's pretty good loot. How many syllables do we have there?
Surprisingly. For me, surprisingly.
Wow. Okay. The chips are getting larger now. I mean, we can put in 256. And as a matter of fact, I think they're selling now, 4 gigabyte chips for almost nothing. It's probably worth it.
Still using DOS and getting them back.
The menorah is on the left, the south.
The menorah is definitely on the south, but the question is, how is it arranged? So surprisingly, even the Man Yomer holds east-west, because of a series of drushes, comes out with the west, at least according to everyone but the Rambam, the west being the second Nair from the east.
The second.
Right.
The
second, so in other words, it's relatively west.
Just
it's west vis-a-vis the east. But it isn't the most west, okay? And this is because of a steer and sukkin that we darsh and elsewhere, which we'll get into later, because it's really not our shita. Our Gemara.
So shita, the middle one, the flame?
Yes, of course. And that's if it's arranged in the direction of north-south, so there is no west. So here we have the shailas, the west, that in the middle nair, they put the opening of the nair so that the wick would be more towards the west, and that would be the one that was called the west. Again, according to some.
Does the Rambam hold that the west is Taka the west?
No.
So what does the Rambam hold, since you specifically took that out?
Well, first of all, he paskins north-south, so this is not my but in any event, in this Mishnah, it appears that the Mishnah is not la'aloch, and indeed he paskins shalom to this Mishnah. Because here we seem to be going like the Man Yomer is going east-west. I mean, paskins north. Anyway.
Either it was one way or it was another way.
Yeah.
So
it is an Indian Mitzvah.
So then how can there be a discussion whether it's north, south, or east, west?
How could there be a discussion on how your tefillin should be? Anyway, either your tefillin were like that. I mean, the truth is there can be different shittas, and they can be applied at the time too. I'm not mechuyev to follow one particular point if I'm in the Beit HaMikdash and the Sanhedrin comes up with a psak that we should put it this way, we'll put it this way. You know, it's not going to be ma'akrik, one way or the other. It could be that there were two traditions all along, the different meanings in a menorah that's in this way or that way, just like there's different traditions of tefillin way before Rashi and Rabbi Natan. But anyway, this is a myth that there's no argument in Metzius. No argument in Metzius would mean it's something that you can easily define by experimentation. Something in a historical Metzius, of course, you have machlokes very often. I mean, you have people reporting, I was there and I saw. And still, we won't paskin like them. Because the psak is not necessarily nogea, the historical memory. In any event, we're not that bound by tradition. The whole idea of Torah Shebaal Peh is that we make our psak according to what's nearer to the basin that's making the psak. So, in any event, what we're talking about over here is now Nogea, another very important machlokas, which makes the Mishnah even more complex. What is the meaning of Hatavat HaNeirot? According to the Rambam, the meaning of Hatavat is that you clean out the Ner, put in now new oil and new wicks, and very suitable for today, and relight. So according to him, you never did a hatavah that was a hachana for lighting. It was actual lighting. Which means that according to the Rambam, you would light the menorah in the daytime, not only in the nighttime. Everybody else goes bananas over this Rambam. Where does he get this from and so on? This is his definition of hatavah that he wrote. And if there was hatavah that he wrote in the morning, then that means there was a hadlok in the morning. It's further complicated by another question, which is the Ner Maravi was found to be Dolek. This is one of the Nisim that took place, up to the time of the death of Shimon HaTzadik, that you would not need to put new oil into the Ner Maravi, and it would continue to burn until the next Hatava, which, according to Moshitas, meant the next night. Not, and then the question is, what is the discussion in our Mishnah? It talks about the two Neirot on the eastern side, and we treat them differently. There's one additional point that we have to know before we get to the Mishnah, which is that the Torah mentions twice Hatavat HaNeirot. And therefore, Behetivo, Behetivo, Behetivo HaNeirot. And it mentions both time Neirot, not only Neir, which means that we're stuck with doing two Hatavot, not doing the entire Hatavah at one time, and we're stuck with a minimum of two Neirot in each Hatavah, and therefore what we end up doing is we say, okay, you know what, we'll basically do the Rov in the beginning, once we start, and we'll leave two Neirot till the end, in order to have our Hatavah Shtei Neirot, and we're supposed to do another Avodah, which we'll see as we light the Ketoret to the Shemen, in the middle. And not do it all at one time. So now those who went in And here we get up to now. Mi shezachah b'dishun hamenorah nichnas umatza shtei haneirot. Now here again you see already they're getting confused. What's it supposed to say? Now the correct girsa, according to most, is the shtei haneirot hamizrachiyot. Reason being that the meaning of the ner ma'aravi is the relative ma'aravi to the most mizrach. If the ner on the far mizrach is ignored, then there's no possible way to call the second ner the ner ma'aravi. So the two nerot on the eastmost side.
You mean if it's not lit?
Right, in other words, we only relate to the ner ma'aravi because of the one that's before it. So you can't have the ner ma'aravi unless it involves two nerot. Therefore, we relate to the two Neirot as being central to the Neir Ma'aravi. So now, Matzah Shtei Neirot Ma'aravi Tolkien doesn't mean he had to find it that way. But if he did find it that way, Midashen Et Hashar, he would do the Dishon, which according again to Moshitas means, clean it out, prepare it for the Hadlaka later in the day, but he did not do a Hadlaka. Umeniach Adeu Tolkien Bimakoman, he would leave the others burning. But because then in the end, he was going to use them to light the new hadlaka. Matz'an shekavu, if he found that they had gone out, then midashnanu madlikan menanokin, he would first light them again after, now, here when it says midashnan, this too is a machlokas, whether it means literally to take out everything, or simply to add oil and to put. In other words, most learn Midashna on here is not the real Dishon that we spoke about in the Hatovah, because you have to do the Hatovah of the other five separately. Right? So you had a problem here. What it means is Midashna in the sense of peeling off the top of the wick to allow it to be relit, like you do in your Hanukkah wicks. You just take off the part that had been burnt the night before, and your Madlikan, you light them first from whatever candles you found Dolkim. And of course, this is Nogea, the whole Shiloh and Hanukkah of Madlikim Miner Lener, which is based on this whole Sugya. V'acharkach midashen et hashar, then after he has burning candles on the east side, he then goes ahead and he lights the rest of the candles. The Even haita lifnei haminorah, uba shalosh ma'alot sh'alea kohino made, because the menorah was so high, there was a stone that was cut with three different stairs in it that the Kohen could climb up, so that he was looking over the menorah to be able to do this work.
Wasn't that high?
It was 18 tefachim. You have to be high enough to look down to be able to get your arms over it to be able to do the Dishon properly.
There's a new article interpreting the drawing of the menorah that was found in a Roman quarter, and he points out in the bottom left there's a crack, but then there's a line that's a drawn line, and he suggests that it's the steps going up to the menorah. It's a guess, but
say that again, on the left
there's the two fragments were found with the menorah and an outline which might be the step on the shulchan.
That's the diagonal one?
Yeah,
the diagonal menorah.
Not the half. It's the one that Rebbe called a piece of art because there's too many cups and sauces on it. In the room in the Herodian quarter on Yeshiva the Kotel.
That's a triangular.
The triangular
base,
one.
The base, not the top.
Right.
Yeah, the one with the triangular base. So someone just now published an article. If you look in the bottom left, there's a crack in the plaster, but then there's a drawn line. He wants to suggest the drawn line would fit if he would have a staircase.
If there were three stairs.
Right. It's a suggestion.
I mean, the crack broke off the part of the bottom of the stairs.
Or the top.
He was saying that because of the crack, people may not have noticed that there's also a drawn line.
So, umeniach et akuz, now just like the tenet was left on the ground in front of the mizbeach of the ktoret to be removed later, so too was the kuz left on the second stair of that stone, which contained all of the dishon of the menorah, And that was going to be taken out afterwards when we completed the Dishun, and it would be put inside at the same place where we had the Dishun Mizbeach HaKitza, and remember, which was the place where we were Zorik the Mura of the Chatas and so on. Amala Shnia V'yotze. Okay, now we're going to get back. Hadron Allah Amar Lehem HaMimuneh. Lo Hayu Koftim Et Atle, Ela Ma'akidim Oto. We're going to talk about Akedat Yitzchak and what the derech of Akedah is for Atle as opposed to simply tying it up. I've heard that they made a video of this and have sent it out on the net to try to close down the Beit HaMikdash or something.
They'll never succeed.
Yeah. The Tana, the basket, couldn't have been...